the Koshcast, coming at you like a North Korean missile. Some ups, some downs, and a probable fizzling out at the end. We'll probably start at Old Trafford, where miserly Moo man-marked his way to glory, while Arsenal play a three at the back and remain three back of United. Elsewhere, Liverpool win away, Bournemouth get Dembele'd, and Southampton are melee'd by City. We'll also delve into La Liga, where Gijón caused some panic, but Isco dances past them. We look ahead to the Champions League in midweek, and of course, celebrate the end of John Terry. Launch! Hello and welcome to the Koshcast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. It's a full house again this week. Bernie, to my left, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm very well, thank you. Roche, you are dressed splendidly.
I am dressed as I always am, Alex. You're dressed pretty well yourself.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It's the Mutual Appreciation Society. Mohamed, how are you?
I'm great. How am I dressed?
You have clothes on.
Okay. I envy Mohamed's dress code. He's the most comfortable of us all.
That's true. That's
yeah, true. But he looks like a mongrel, so...
Okay. All right, so let's talk about football so that Mohamed can get involved. I think it's appropriate we start at Old Trafford.
No? I mean, with the mongrel tactics that we saw. Yeah, we could. We saw the return of man-marking.
Mm.
I mean, before we get into that, first of all, before the game, anyone surprised to not have Ibra in the starting lineup?
Very surprised.
Yeah.
Very happy. I mean, I think the last pod we were referencing that I might write an article about the subject.
Yes.
But I did not actually expect that Mourinho would have the balls to leave him off. And it paid off. Absolutely.
Yeah, I really like what I saw. I think the front two had some interplay that I had not seen all season. Like, you know, there were some flicks and tricks with Rashford and Lingard that you just haven't seen for a while.
Well, the thing is also that with the minute Ibra was dropped, the reason given was tiredness and this at the beginning of the game, but I had a feeling it wasn't. I had a feeling that Mourinho wanted to change the system a little bit and play a bit differently. And I knew that after the game, had they won, he would have told everyone that was the case, which he did.
Sure.
Because he did go, you know what, you guys all talk about dropping Ibra because he's tired. What if we just change the formation to win the game? Which is something, you know, Mourinho would definitely let you know that he was the mastermind behind the whole thing.
The thing about this was, right after the Anderlecht game, he actually, for the first time this season, criticized Ibrahimovic's contribution. And Zlatan admitted, yeah, I wasn't playing very well, I'm tired. So there was probably a little bit of, you didn't play well enough, you're saying you're tired, we're going to go with youth and exuberance and pace, and try and win this game.
Yeah, and I think it was smart because... Not because Zlatan doesn't contribute enough, although you could argue that, but the three centre-backs at Chelsea usually end up dealing with one striker. Mm. So, all right, he's given them two, given them something else to think about, but it's not just two strikers, it's two very quick strikers who are willing to go right across that front line. And they're not staying central like Zlatan would, they're moving all around, and that's when Luiz and Cahill get uncomfortable. They're not bad defenders if they have one job to do and stay in a zone, but once you start moving them around, as we saw... They panic.
We also saw what that means is that Mkhitaryan couldn't get a spot on the team. That's something I kind of thought of afterwards. Just like, oh, wait, Mkhitaryan didn't play. Because, I mean, 100k a week Lingard took a spot, which he played really well. I mean, a few people played really well for United this game. Young at left back.
And captain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And captain.
I mean, Fellaini now Young. It's really doing the rounds.
Personally, I was shocked by the United lineup with Young being captain, but then also with Fellaini once again in central midfield. And to be fair, both of them proved me wrong, proved Bernie wrong as well.
I thought the individual performances from United, from 1 to 11, were absolutely fantastic. I honestly, Mourinho, then this is the thing. And one of my questions about this game is, can Mourinho get the same level of performance out of this squad when there isn't, like, a vendetta on the line? Like, Mourinho is pumped for this game, right? Because it's Chelsea. He's going back there. The fans have labelled him a Judas. He wants to win it, and he wants to spoil Chelsea's day. And so he is able to get his players equally pumped up for this. And they were. They were brilliant. Herrera was the embodiment of everything that Mourinho wanted.
We'll definitely get to Herrera in a lot more detail, but we were watching this game together, Alex, and I said... about the whole players pumped up and playing well. Mourinho can do his tactics all he wants. He can drop Ibra, he can, you know, do whatever he likes and kind of try and win the game tactically. But if his players don't buy in, then it's useless. It's not going to come off. They're pressuring on Chelsea, their energy off the ball was something that we haven't seen from United in a long time. I mean, United, we always talk about how they miss chances, they're great going forward, blah, 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 but they're not scoring. But this game, it was like kind of the hustle in midfield was on a next level. It was a Liverpool-Tottenham kind of look.
Yeah, and I don't think that Chelsea did themselves any favors because if you saw a lot of straight passes. I think Mourinho set them up to disrupt Chelsea's play. Any long balls out the back were intercepted by Fellaini. Fellaini gave them out to the wings instantaneously. And that was the course of the entire match.
The thing about this that was absolutely fantastic is Manchester United usually at home are the dominant force in terms of possession, which they still were, shots, again, which they still were, but the style of play is, we're Manchester United, we're going to pass the ball around, we're going to create, I'm going to try and score, and then they can't. In this game, they said, come on, come at us, and they counterattacked them perfectly. That's how they scored, via handball, obviously, but still, they counterattacked Chelsea absolutely brilliantly. Ander Herrera did the best man marking job on any player I have seen in the last 10 years of watching football.
It was
Hazard had, he was gone. There was nothing he could do about it. And there's a little gif that's been going around of literally Hazard is walking and Ander Herrera is walking behind him like a shadow. You're not letting him go. That was a masterclass. And by the way, Ander Herrera is one of the most intelligent midfielders in the Premier League. You watch that guy play. He knows exactly what to do on the pitch when you tell him to do it.
Well, really. One of the funny, I don't disagree with you, although I don't like him because he seems annoying, but I do appreciate his talent. But one of the funniest things we saw yesterday that I've never seen before is Herrera was not looking for the ball when United were in possession. But when occasionally someone gave it to him, he passed it away as soon as possible and then just turned away so that he wouldn't receive it again and went back to find Hazard. He just didn't even want the ball.
And just another thing, sorry, because I know someone on Twitter said this has to be the Herrera pod. But the thing about Herrera, again, United fans have been calling for him to be captain. I said this on the pod a couple weeks ago that they're calling for him. People were like, what are you talking about? If you watch this game, he yelled at everyone, put them in the right positions. When they lost the ball, he was on top of them. He was literally orchestrating this Manchester United performance. I don't think we've seen anything like this in years in the Premier League, honest to God.
You know why he's not captain, though?
Oh,
why is that?
His weird voice.
Yeah, his voice is far too annoying. You can't take it that seriously.
He looks a bit small, but he is a bulldog.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Herrera obviously played a very important role there. The other man-marking assignment that Mourinho had was, I think it was Darmian on Pedro, if I'm not mistaken. And I think what he saw, or what Mourinho kind of analyzed on that Chelsea side, is that he took away the two creative players on the Chelsea side. He just took them out of the game. So if it's not Hazard or Pedro, no one else is going to kind of provide that creativeness to Costa or to any other player. Because you've got Matic and Kante. If Fabregas was there, then maybe Fabregas would be a third option. But it's literally just whoever plays on that right, whether it be Pedro or Willian or whoever, and Hazard. And Mourinho saw that, and Mourinho definitely did very well to close them both down. So I also don't want to take away from Darmian's role here. He did very well to kind of stop that gap there.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to say. I mean, Chelsea had zero shots on target the entire match. That's probably the first time it's happened all season.
Since 2007, which was also against Manchester United.
And also ended 2-0.
And I want to highlight one quick thing. In our Throwback Thursday article, we mentioned some...
You mentioned, not we. Yeah, not
some,
you.
Some extremely good defensive pairings. And I had mentioned Rojo, Bailly, and Valencia in there, and I was ridiculed. But you just saw in this match exactly why they're there.
Okay, we didn't say they were bad players. Yeah. It's just that you nominated them for PFA Player of the Year.
But you're right. Your point stands. They played a fantastic game this game. Bailly was a beast. Rojo knew how to get under Costa's skin, and that's what you do with Costa. You give him a couple of nudges at the beginning of the game, and he's completely not interested in playing the game in terms of the aim is to win the game anymore. No, his aim now is personal. It's to get you booked. It's to get under your skin. And it completely takes him out of the game. And that's... I'm pretty sure Conte will not be happy with what he saw from Costa this game.
No, I think Conte has clearly worked very hard to get that kind of nonsense out of Costa's game. We've seen a lot less of it this season. And it really didn't take much for it to come back. And I just kind of feel like there's already rumours about Costa leaving at the end of the season. And to me, it feels kind of inevitable. I think they can do better.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But on Conte, I was surprised. We all view him as a very astute tactical manager because he made this shift to 3-4-3 or whatever you want to call it, and it's done so well. The problem is we've said this before. We haven't seen what happens when it goes wrong because it hasn't gone wrong. right? Mm-hmm. The only time it went wrong, I guess, was Crystal Palace.
And Spurs a bit.
But they dominated that game.
But yeah, like, neither of those games were system failures, right? Mm-hmm. It just kind of happenstance. In this game, after 10 minutes, you could see what was happening, right? You could see the man-marking job. You could see that Chelsea were being suffocated. And it took him about 60 minutes to change anything.
Look, I'll be fair to him. I don't think it took him that long. I think he made like three different changes during the game. The first was like 10 minutes in, he switched Moses and Azpilicueta, I think. He switched them up completely because Azpilicueta on the left was being completely eaten up by, I think it was Lingard. So he did that.
Valencia.
Yeah, and Valencia and Lingard. He did that. It didn't really help. And then after they went down, he did bring on Cesc. Took out a defender, I believe.
Yeah,
he did a few things. It's just United played well.
Obviously, one other thing is that Chelsea lost Marcos Alonso to illness in the warm up, and then Courtois was also not playing.
Basketball related injury for a commercial.
Yeah, really?
Is that possible?
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he was doing an NBA promo.
Something along those lines.
Oh dear.
But the to Alex's point, Chelsea's squad is not that deep.
No.
In reality, and if you're bringing on, and firstly, Mourinho. Props for when Cesc came on, he brought on Carrick to mitigate that.
Yeah.
But the fact is, when you actually look at what happens when Chelsea try to change things, it's Willian and Cesc.
Yep.
That's it. He doesn't trust Batshuayi whatsoever, so those are his two attacking options to change games. So when they are put under pressure, like Manchester United did today, Spurs, Arsenal did, it's very, very difficult for them to adjust, and they're going to have to fix that when they're in the Champions League, and which they probably will do.
I think it's a good point. And he brought on, to your Batshuayi point, and I'm flummoxed by this. I mean, at the start of the season, Batshuayi came on in about three or four games in the last 20 minutes when Chelsea weren't winning and got assists and goals. And he and Costa looked like a good partnership and he looked like an effective sub. And now he can't even get 5 minutes. So something has clearly gone on there. But he brought on Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And he's been coming on as a sub for like a couple years now. And my question is, what is it that he does?
His hairstyle, that's what he does. It's horrendous.
So he's the Pogba
of Chelsea?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. I mean, we're not even going to touch on Pogba too much because he didn't have a bad game. He didn't have a great game either. But I want to touch on something else before we move on, is Hazard. To me, Herrera, we gave him all the praise he deserves. He did the job that he was supposed to do. He took out Hazard, which, you know, a lot of people think is the best player in the league and all that good stuff. A lot of his fans, Hazard's personal fans, think he's up there, top five, top whatever. Comparisons with Neymar, Bale.
Sorry, personal fans. Like,
yeah, like people who...
That shouldn't be a thing.
Hazard is their favorite player. And they try and kind of put him in that light and in that category. I think Hazard didn't do enough in the game. I believe that, yes, he was being man-marked by Herrera. Fine, and Herrera did a good job. But Hazard, to me, I watched the game and it just felt like he didn't want the responsibility. He didn't want to ask for it every single time. I was telling Alex that if you know you're being man-marked by someone, literally ask for it every time. And every time you get it, go down. Every time you get it, go down. That's it. Four times in, it's always the same player. Herrera, Hazard, Herrera, Hazard. The ref will give him a yellow 20 minutes in. Just you have to take the game by the horns, and he didn't do that. He shied away from that responsibility. And honestly, Costa did it. Costa, as slimy as he is, every time Rojo was there, he fell.
To be very fair, in the FA Cup game, it was the FA Cup game where Herrera got sent off, right?
That's the one.
Right before the sending off, Hazard was ripping us a new asshole.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. So circumstances, sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and say, that guy was better than me. And that's all he could do.
That's fine if I can see the attempt from Hazard. It wasn't there. Like, it wasn't 100%, you know, it's an individual duel. I want to beat Herrera right now. And he just gave in.
But there was one other thing at play. I mean, Hazard himself on the field is playing his position. But there's also a component like the service to Hazard, for example. And generally, it's Kante. Was also non-existent in this game.
That's true. He was marked out quite well. I mean, Pogba did a good job on Kante, to be fair, as well.
We should move on, but one thing, we're talking about influence and doing stuff. I don't know if you guys have picked up on this. Marcus Rashford takes corners, free kicks, and literally charges at everyone. He's 19 years old and taking responsibility at Manchester United. Watch that space. That kid is taking on everything.
The fourth before we move on. It was a really good game. Herrera, we give him all the credit. We can't take away that pass to Rashford. That was a brilliant pass.
Are you talking about the handball or the pass?
Well,
The we'll handball pass to himself.
We're giving him a pass on the handball, and he's giving Rashford a pass.
That's good. Yeah. And that comes down to the intelligence that he has.
That's why same pass he gave Mkhitaryan against Tottenham. He's very good at that.
He is. And Rashford, I thought the first touch was brilliant. His path for such a young player. I think Begovic's positioning could be a bit better towards the center of the goal. But you know what? For Rashford to take it like that and for Herrera to make that pass was great. Quick round of the table before we move on. Would you have called the handball?
Real time.
Like, this wasn't even one of the ones where you need
it's
replay.
It's stupid in that in the rule, it's not a handball by the rule, but I would have called it.
I'm just on Twitter a lot, and there's a lot of like, no, the rules. And I get the rules, but like, it's too influential to not give.
No,
like the ball stopped dead.
Okay, officially moving on.
Okay.
P.S. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. Let's move on.
Liverpool beat West Brom 1-0 away from home. This was a very important one for Liverpool. One, because this is the kind of team they will lose to away from home.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to keep that push for fourth place going. It was 0-0 for quite a while, I believe.
For the first 44 minutes of this match.
And then Firmino came up with a really good goal, I thought.
It was an okay goal. It was a set piece flicked on. I honestly thought that the set piece was a bit short. Lucky to flick it on.
Yeah.
And then the back post headed by Firmino. If you're West Brom at this point, I mean, what else are you working on? Tony Pulis is making you take set pieces day and night. And you have failed to defend a set piece.
Yeah,
to be fair, it doesn't happen that often. So I agree with you. Maybe you can consider it a fluke that, you know, the best set piece team in the nation defending and scoring got scored on like
that. Pulis did say that his fear is that once West Brom got to that 40-point mark, they would kind of let off. And they have a little bit.
So he said that was his fear. And they have very much. I mean, they've lost four in a row now, I think. Yeah. But like in
Wait,
didn't they beat Arsenal?
Yeah, but that was a few games ago.
Was it?
Has it been four games?
Feels like yesterday.
It's been a while. Maybe it's three or four. Anyway, but in the post-game interviews, he never sounds upset about losing anymore because he's safe.
Oh,
so it's like, well, are you actually giving your players any incentive? But to counter his usual method of aerial bombardment, it turned out Klopp apparently there was like a windy day this week in Liverpool midweek, and Klopp decided that's when he was going to train his team to deal with this aerial bombardment. So he took them out on this windy day and just like lobbed balls at them all training session.
And then Moreno flew away.
Can we talk about Moreno?
Yeah.
This is the most we're ever going to talk about Moreno on this podcast. Yeah. I guarantee you.
Sure.
Is he the worst left back in the past? Like, is he actually?
He's up there.
Like, he's so bad.
Or down there.
That's a good question. And who has been worse?
Who are they supposed to replace him with? Because we all knew this going in.
Well, Milner's done an exceptional job.
Like, okay, that's the sad part. Like, Milner is the left back.
Well, yeah, I mean, Moreno looked. He had that open goal towards the end of the game,
where
you know he could have given it to Firmino, whoever was running the whole field with him. He didn't. He'd say, even if you go for goal, I do not begrudge him for going for goal.
No.
Just don't miss. It's literally Not just that. The last 10 minutes of that game was very weird.
It was epic.
It was confusing.
Anything could have happened.
Was it Green? Who was the keeper?
No, fuck Green. Sorry. 2008 is calling. He wants his goalkeeper back.
Foster was all the way up, making tackles, thinking he's Ter Stegen, and then Moreno missing open goals. It was crazy. I think someone hit the post. It was insane.
I think Neuer's upset that you used Ter Stegen as a reference. Yeah.
Well, in the 6-1 versus PSG, that's all.
Yeah.
Speaking of keepers, what is this Mignolet renaissance that's going on?
I don't like it at all.
That 1-1 he saved from
Phillips, wasn't it?
Phillips was fantastic.
Yeah. Bruce Grobbelaar is upset.
Yes.
And so am I.
I've got a quick stat. When you said that the set piece was short and the header was good, the flick on, you're right. And it was Lucas that did it. And this is only the second time he's ever had two assists in a season.
Who?
Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
He's a disgrace.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anyways, the game ended with that scoreline. And that puts Liverpool... I mean, they have a lot of games in hand. They're in third. They've got extra games. They've played like one or two extra games than everyone around them, but they are in third. If City do win, though, they will leapfrog.
No, City are third now.
City
are fourth.
Still, behind
Liverpool.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
So, if you're looking at West Brom as well, eighth place, season over. That's why they lost the last three games. They're all on vacation.
I mean, they'll take eighth place, to be fair. That's for how bad they started the season, they'll take it. I mean, they were, for a while, their relegation.
Top four is in United's hands, actually.
If
they win the next, if they win the two games they have in hand, they are going to be fourth.
Yeah.
That's how that's going to work.
Well, yeah, they would be in fourth because they would tie Liverpool, but Liverpool's still 4 goals ahead on goal difference
right
now. True. But City as well, if United win both their games and they're even on game, City are 1 point ahead.
It's going to be fun.
Well, I mean, let's talk about City before we do our quiz. They beat Southampton 3-0 away from home in the early game on, I think it was a Saturday.
This is a good win for City.
This was a good win for City, or actually the late game. The thing is, Vincent Kompany played. So he's been playing recently. He's come back from injury. I think it's his second game on the trot.
Mm-hmm.
Scored a goal.
Celebrated like an absolute maniac.
But were you not happy for him?
No, I was.
I was. I hate City, but I was so happy for Vincent Kompany.
It meant a lot to him. Definitely meant a lot to him.
You know he's a doubt for the next game.
Oh my God. Did he get injured in the celebration?
Something. David Silva got that assist. And here's a stat for you.
Mm-hmm.
David Silva has now been involved in more Premier League goals since the 11-12 season than any other midfielders. 33 goals, 57 assists. That is good stuff.
What about Catamol? Huh?
Catamol, I think, is a goal behind.
Yeah.
32.
Yeah.
How
about tackles? Three assists behind. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no. But the second goal of this game, the finish by Leroy Sané after the Kevin De Bruyne.
The counterattack?
Yeah, the counterattack. Uh-huh. That finish between the goalie's legs.
The first touch.
It was silk.
It was art.
It was beautiful.
Are we seeing more finishes between goalies? It feels that way, but
I feel like we've
asked this question before.
I think you're noticing it more now because you're trying to do that in indoor soccer.
That is true. Yeah. True.
By the way, first half of this game, non-event.
Yeah.
Non-event. City were not up for it. I don't think Southampton cared either. It was just this weird thing. There should have been... No, actually. Okay, Forster, penalty or not? Did you guys see that? The Sané and Forster incident?
Yeah, well,
he got the ball.
No.
Slight touch on the ball.
It was a penalty.
Very slight, but was it a penalty?
I don't think it was.
He did get the ball.
He got the ball fair and square way before making contact with Sané. That's the thing.
So you don't think it's a penalty?
No.
My thing is, it took 5 replays for the commentators and us to establish if it was a penalty or not. How did the referee get that so right?
Well, that's a different question. If you think the referee got lucky, it's a different question. But it's like saying, had someone shot it at goal and he made the save with that same touch, would you not give him the save?
No, of course.
Okay.
But I'm saying, like, I'm impressed that he got that. Yeah. I think it's the right call. I'm just impressed that he got it.
If it's the penalty shot I'm thinking about, there is an incident that I will reference, and it's the Rooney versus Arsenal penalty.
Yes.
Where Rooney literally kicked the ball into the Stretford end and then let the goalkeeper
But he was hacked.
Right.
In this instance, the goalie actually touched the ball.
but it was clearly
played for. I know what you mean.
Can we talk about how Fraser Foster is not good anymore?
No, he's not.
He goes up and down.
He's been very much down this
year. Yeah.
If his company's goal...
Yes.
Did you see him flap at that? I didn't understand what that was. That should never have actually been a goal.
He was clapping the effort.
Foster is a man mountain. If he just stood still, he'd probably save more than he misses.
Yeah,
yes, that's true.
Quick question before we move on. I want to ask where Gabby Adini is and why Southampton have completely fallen off the rails ever since
he was injured.
This was
his first game back.
To be fair, he looked quite good until in the first half. I was telling Alex about this. He's a very smart player. You can tell he knows what to do, when to do it. And every time he got the ball, he moved it on. He didn't, you know, as a number 9, he didn't hold on to it. And he really got them thinking. It's just City's kind of talents came through in the second half. And I want to just focus on one of those talents, Leroy Sané, one more time. He's extremely young.
We did this.
No. But, I mean, I don't know. Do you guys think he's going to be as good as I think he's going to be? Like, I think he could dominate this league in years to come.
Okay, this is what I'll tell you. His first season, he's done very well.
Yeah.
So did Anthony Martial. So did Marcus Rashford. So did Iheanacho. So did Bellerin. You know, give it some time. Because we've seen players absolutely dominate. Pep could wake up tomorrow and sign someone else. He could maybe not feel Sané. Let's wait on that. Because there have been better seasons. Martial's season last season. Better than Sané. So let's just relax a little bit.
True. But I mean, he's lucky.
I'm not talking about his talent. I'm talking about situations could change.
I think you're right. I mean, we can't predict what's going to happen. But I think he has it in him to be an incredibly good player.
I think there are a lot of players that had it in them.
Yeah.
Or have it in them right now.
The only other thing I'd say is that if he is as successful as you think he might be, I don't think he'll be in the Premiership that long.
Yes.
That's really philosophical.
Well, I mean, you could say the same about Hazard. We didn't think he could be here for this long either. I mean,
that's because he got trash and the Real Madrid didn't want him anymore.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
So, it's a different
point. They can't buy everybody. Surely they can leave some behind.
Don't test them.
What else? Let's do the quiz before we talk about...
Wait. Aguero has 12-12. Is he still rubbish or...?
He's always been rubbish.
Oh, okay.
I mean, stats don't mean anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's do the quiz.
Okay. Welcome to the David Kuiz.
Good.
I like that.
Strong. Good, simple. Yeah. Nice. Effective.
And strong in the back.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets beaten 7-1.
Yeah. Wow. By the Germans.
Or 2-0 over the weekend. Yeah.
So, quiz brought to you as usual by Open Sports, which is an app you can download on Android and what's the other one called? iOS. To find pickup sports in your city. Yep. Obviously, it's got soccer on there, which
was
we care about.
Was that a quiz question? Look how you phrased it.
No, yeah. No, it wasn't. No. You guys don't get a
very Australian. Yeah. It's like sports in the city.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
But yeah. We like Open Sports.
We do. You should get them. We use them all the time.
The weather's good, so definitely get on that.
Yep. Very, very useful. Okay. You guys ready? Let's remind listeners. Rishay, what's your buzzing?
That was easy.
Alex and Bernie. Fantastic. Here we go. We've got three questions today. Question number one. Name the only Italian to ever win a Premier League medal.
That was easy.
Gianluca Vialli.
Wrong. Alex.
Roberto.
No. Nope.
I don't know.
Roberto Di Matteo.
No.
As a manager.
No, as a player.
As a player?
Yeah.
Wait.
I'll start giving you clues if you want.
That's terrible, actually.
You want clues?
Yeah.
City.
The only Italian as a player.
Barbalotelli.
Yes.
Oh.
Man. Well done.
My guesses were horrendous.
They were. Question number two. Which were the three failed bids for the 2018 FIFA World Cup final, which Russia got?
The United States.
No.
What?
England.
Yes. I mean, that's the easy one.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay, they were European joint bids.
France.
Nope.
What's up? Russia would have been one of them.
Well, Russia won.
It. Netherlands and Belgium.
Yes.
We have two. There's one more.
Yes, one more. Now go south.
Morocco.
Italy.
Morocco.
What, mate?
In Europe.
Oh. Italy.
No.
Spain.
And?
Portugal.
Yes. So again, because we chopped that up, it's Portugal, Spain, Belgium, Netherlands, and then England.
Mohamed.
Yes.
That was not fun.
Yeah, that was horrendous.
Because you guys didn't know any answers so far. All right.
Yeah, I got the first one. I know what it was.
There's still one more. There's still one.
You'll get this one. You'll get this one. Name the only player transferred in the Premier League between two Premier League clubs in January for more than £20 million.
That was easy.
Juan Mata.
No.
What?
Alex.
Fernando Torres.
No. What? This transfer
you
window.
You didn't say that.
Okay, well, fine.
Between Premier League clubs?
Alex.
Jordan Ayew.
No.
What? Jordan Ayew?
Not Jordan. The other Ayew.
No, between Premier League clubs for more than £20 million.
Oh my God, it's killing me.
Okay.
Oh dear.
Here's a clue. Defensive mid.
Morgan Schneiderlin.
Yes.
All right, before we go on with any analysis of other games this weekend, we have someone to analyze.
Yeah.
Jonathan Terry.
Jonathan?
I don't know, I'm guessing. John Tezza.
It's like that one time we called Phil Jagielka Philbert for a whole podcast.
Yeah. I think a whole month we did.
Yeah. Anyway, John Terry. Is he a Premier League legend, or is he a despicable see you next Tuesday?
He's an upstanding human being, and I love him to bits.
Well, you have to distinguish between player and person. As a person, hands down, despicable human being. like, there's things that I can't say, okay? Let's leave it at that.
Say them.
As a player, even as a player, I have to say he's a bit of a despicable see you next Tuesday.
I mean, I think he's a legend in the Premier League. He, at one point, was one of the best, if not the best, defender in the world. He did it all. Like, I think he doesn't get a lot of credit because he's that kind of vulgar English kind of person that just, like, goes into tackles really hard, doesn't have that touch to bring the ball out of play from the back. And I think that goes against him, especially now, mm-hmm. how the game has evolved. But at the time, I mean, don't think of John Terry as of the last 5 years. In his peak, he was phenomenal.
I think at his peak, you would say that I think the best center defenders were Rio, Vidic, Terry, and I think, was that Sol Campbell? Did they cross over?
Yeah.
Did that happen?
Yeah. There was Ledley King as well.
But Ledley King never played because of his knee, right?
Yeah,
but John Terry was up there in the world. I'm talking about, like you're saying, Real Madrid, he could have slotted in. Barcelona, the way Puyol played, he could have probably played. Nah, actually, no, never mind. But you get what I mean. He was very, very good. Yeah.
And Chelsea fans will tell you, captain, fantastic. He did so many good things for that club. He did a lot of good things for United.
Rubbish for England.
He missed that penalty in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
You know, he did a lot for a lot of
people. The best part of the highlights of his career that I really enjoy are the penalty miss and the subsequent crying fiesta, as well as Diaby's kick in his face that completely knocked him out.
To this day,
and this is how much I hate John Terry because he's a terrible human being, to this day, I still watch that 45-second clip on YouTube.
that
moment of contact of Diaby's foot into Terry's face.
Are we judging him based on Wayne Bridge, though?
Yeah, well, yeah, 100%.
Well, I mean, let's list the things that we're judging him on. There's Wayne Bridge.
Uh-huh. There's Anton Ferdinand.
There's Anton Ferdinand. Being racist. Yes. There's inviting people into the dressing room of Stamford Bridge and doing paid tours.
Uh-huh. There's a full kit wanker thing.
Yes.
For the Champions League final.
Yes.
There's
his uncle is a drug dealer.
Uh-huh. His dad has been charged with stealing money a whole bunch of times. It's like, your son is a multi-millionaire.
But, on the plus side, he was a fantastic central defender who has won everything there is to win in club football and literally was the only youth product to ever mean anything from Chelsea. So, you know what? I think the positives kind of outweigh the negative for John Terry.
I think earlier we spoke about Ruben Loftus-Cheek and you're now being harsh.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, he was a fantastic defender. And you know who else was a fantastic defender?
Who?
His lawyer.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Also, I mean, if we're going to judge him that way, you know, the best player the Premier League has ever seen in Giggs had an affair with his brother's wife for 8 years and broke up the whole
family.
Yeah,
but that doesn't count.
Doesn't count. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, so that's what we have to say about John Terry.
Okay, he's racist.
Yes, sure.
Hate him. Watch the Diaby kick on his face.
sorry. Carling Cup final. Question. Of the English See You Next Tuesdays, because most of them who have been English captains are See You Next Tuesdays, Rooney, Gerrard, and John Terry.
Lampard.
Is John Terry... Oh, Lampard's a good guy. Is John Terry... I hate Shearer. Yeah. Is John Terry the highest? Like, what does he rank?
John Terry...
Let's just go Rooney, Gerrard, and John Terry.
John Terry's a boss. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of negatives.
I'm talking only about the negatives.
But, like... You know, I don't want to say you'd want to be him. I'm just saying, like, he's the cooler one of the three.
I don't think he is, because marketing Rooney is a marketing juggernaut. So sure. Rooney is probably seen as
every other
the coolest.
But do you
want
to look like Rooney?
No.
Honestly, like, out of the three, I think John Terry is the most, like, he has most command of the English language. Rooney cannot say anything. The best thing about Rooney is just his name. Rooney, Rooney, wow, he sounds like a great player. John Terry's going to say words that you never knew existed.
Is Steven Gerrard consequential in this debate?
No one knows what he's saying either.
You know the choice is bad when John Terry's the intellectual of your options.
Yeah.
The other two haven't done racist things, so for me, that's it.
Sure. Well, I mean,
couldn't tell if they did, because you wouldn't understand.
I mean, Rooney's also going to China, so the racism might still come out.
He did cheat on his wife, too, with a prostitute.
He did.
Yeah, so, but he was 19 at the time, whereas when Terry did the bridge thing, like, he was very much an adult.
So, it was his teammate.
Also, it's less about the wife, it's more about, like, there's a lot of other people. Why your teammates, like, anyways... Let's move on.
Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, Thibaut Courtois. He was a legend.
Runs
in
Chelsea's DNA, I guess.
Okay, well.
It's running in someone's DNA.
that's what I tried to cut out. Anyways, let's move on to the actual games. Spurs beat Bournemouth 4-0.
Bournemouth got their cherry popped while we're at it.
Yes, well done. Dembele, great game, as usual. First goal of the season. So, you know, good stuff.
He dominated. His pass completed was...
Completed?
Completion.
I'm still thinking about John Terry.
Same, to be fair.
Most people are, to be honest.
So is Wayne Bridges' wife.
98.5%.
What is that? Completion.
Dembele
completed. Is that John Terry's success rate?
No, that's the Durex success rate.
Oh, mate.
We apologize for this part.
I can't. Like, I don't think I can talk about anything.
All right, let's bring this back on track. I wrote an article recently comparing Manchester United's chances and their, you know, their attack and their defense statistics. Yeah. Spurs are actually the best attack in the league and the best defense in the league.
Correct.
Yep.
And they showed that in this game.
Why are they winning the league, though?
I mean, it's true. They are close. I mean, this game puts them only 4 points away from Chelsea. And
that's
people
true.
Want to say it's over and whatnot, but, it, you know, think about it this way. Had Chelsea lost to City a weekend ago or two or whatever it was, and then lost to United this weekend, Spurs would be a point away. So Chelsea are a loss away from it getting really wobbly, and they might get that loss. I mean, Tottenham need to win all their games, but in the form they're in, they might do it. And Bournemouth, we talked about before, and we wrote that article on the blog about how they concede way too many goals and are still probably going to stay up. And this is one of those examples. We said when they concede in buckets, but it doesn't matter because it's the same 3 points.
Yeah, they concede in buckets to the point that Vincent Janssen scored a goal.
That is a good
That's
point.
When you know that your defense is absolutely terrible.
Yes, that's true.
But, Alex, sorry, stat on Vincent Janssen.
Yes.
I think they said it took him 28 attempts or something like that, or 29 shots to score his first goal for Tottenham. It took him 28 to do the same thing for AZ or whatever.
Yeah. So now he's going to kick off?
Well, they're saying if, you know, it looks like it's going to happen.
I mean, he had one hot season with AZ where he was like 34 appearances, 27 goals. Now he's come to Tottenham and he's got two or three goals, but two of them are penalties.
I mean, and the thing to take into consideration is that he was in essentially non-league before his one season with AZ, and he was bought by Tottenham after that one season. So this is only his second professional season of football.
Sounds like Giroud.
Yeah, it sounds like Koscielny.
A bit.
Yeah.
But he's younger, so... 12 wins in 12 for Spurs at home. The longest ever winning stretch
at home. I mean, Spurs are unbeaten at home this season, aren't they? Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Sorry, have they won every home game? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or just...
No, but they've won the last 12.
Oh.
Sorry, they haven't lost at home, and they've won the last 12.
That's impressive.
Yeah, our last few have been without Kane, too. That is also impressive. I mean, players like Son stepping up. Eriksen and Dele Alli behind whoever plays up top. At this point, it doesn't even seem to matter. I mean, they had Janssen in some of these games, and it still came out winners. So
perfectly drilled.
Yeah, looking at the run-in right now, you're thinking, off the top two, who's in the most or the better championship form? Tottenham Hotspur's hand down, because Chelsea are dropping points right now.
Chelsea have a very forgiving end to the season in comparison to Tottenham. Tottenham still have to play United at home, Arsenal at home. I think they have another one. I can't remember who it is, but they have a very difficult run-in going in.
They do, and they also have Chelsea coming up on the weekend in the FA Cup semi-final. Now, you can read into this or not. Some people will say whoever wins it takes momentum into the league. I don't really buy that. I think they're two different things. But it will be interesting to see how that affects people, you know, and their mentality.
I think I agree with you that it would affect Chelsea more. If Spurs lose, not a big deal. Okay, whatever. If Chelsea lose another game, you know, three out of four. That would really put a dent into their confidence a little bit, because they believed in that system that they have so much that now it might start to crumble a little bit. All right, let's move on to their Arsenal neighbors who are away.
Yeah, Arsenal neighbors.
They're London
Tottenham
neighbors.
Neighbors.
Yeah, I know. They're London neighbors who are away at Middlesbrough. And I think today commemorates a very important day in the life of every Arsenal fan.
Massive
really?
Day.
Yes, it is the day which Arsene Wenger has changed formation for the first time in 20 years.
Oh, well, okay. Oh. No, it's happened twice.
Yes.
Right. So he changed from 4-4-2 to 4-3-3 a few years after everyone else did it. And that was in like the, late noughties?
Yeah,
2008-ish.
Yeah.
And then this is the first, now he's changed to a 3-4-2-1 for this match at least.
Yes.
For the first time in, 10
I mean,
years.
You should have seen Twitter when the lineup came out, when the official
lineup. Alex lost his mind, didn't know what to do with himself.
It's true.
I still consider this a failure because Burrow scored.
Sure.
And Burrow don't score.
Sure.
Yeah, reasonable.
I mean, to be fair, Arsenal won the game, but they didn't look convincing at all. I mean, it was at 1-1 at one point, and it looked like the game would end at 1-1. And you're right, there is no business for Burrow to be scoring goals.
Where was this game? Sorry.
In Middlesbrough. And I think Arsene Wenger was asked about the change of formation, and he said, I wanted three centre-backs to deal with more long balls, give us more stability. And that might be the case. But to me, I think what this was Arsene just trying something else to get his side out of this slump. Because he's tried a number of things. He's tried a number of different lineups, different players in different positions.
Has he tried retiring?
That's the one thing left. But this worked, so he doesn't need to.
To be fair to you, you were talking about he's trying something new to get things going. Trying Monreal as a wingback proved that at least he learned not to do that again.
I mean, that's one thing. But he also took, on the other side, he took Bellerin out of the firing line because last game, and we didn't talk about this in midweek on Monday because we had the podcast on Sunday, the Arsenal fans at the one game, Crystal Palace, when they lost 3-0, were chanting in one voice, you are not fit to wear the shirt. And Bellerin was like right there. The ball went out of play. They didn't give him back the ball. They were yelling, you're not fit to wear the shirt. And obviously, it's about everybody. But he clearly took
I was going to ask you the question. Was that specifically about Bellerin or about the
It team? Wasn't, but he was right there. And he took the brunt of it. And then he came at the end of the game to, you know, applaud the fans. And he kind of told him to go away. So he took the brunt of it. And he clearly took him out of the fire lineup because he wasn't injured. And he came on at the end of the game. So,
I mean, I don't think this was about taking him out of the firing line because of that incident, unless it has really mentally affected him, which would be disappointing from a professional footballer.
Yeah.
But it's more that his form has just been utterly horrendous since he came back from injury. He's lost the pace that makes him a stellar player, because honestly, when you take that out of his game, there isn't that much left. He's not a brilliant crosser of the ball. He's not brilliant defensively yet. Hopefully that will improve. So I think this was the right move. And Oxlade-Chamberlain played right wing back and did a really bloody good job.
That's
he was man of the match for you guys.
So he's man of the match for you guys. Is it simply the case of, I need someone to play wing back, and Oxlade-Chamberlain is just simply better at wing back than Bellerin? Was that his decision simply was?
I think Bellerin is really, really suited for the wing back position way more than the right back position.
Mm.
It's just, I truly believe that he just didn't want to play Bellerin. One, very, very bad form. And two, I really think he was quite affected by last game's kind of antics. But Ox is suited for that position because he can see the whole game in front of him. He doesn't need to get it and turn and do all that stuff, which he's maybe not the best at. And he can just run at people, and that's what he did.
Another thing about Arsene Wenger that I found completely shocking before this game, and to me it just shows the standard that you like to talk about. He literally said, if we lose Oxlade-Chamberlain, it will be a tragedy. And it will be shocking to the team.
Yeah.
As good as I think he has been in the last couple cameos and things, for you to make that statement about Oxlade-Chamberlain just shows exactly why you are failing at Arsenal. That is exactly why. Have higher standards than that. It's as simple as that.
He should be a player of Ox's stature and ability in kind of relative to everyone around him should be dispensable.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of Arsene Wenger ideology that has been misplaced over the years. Wenger is emotionally attached to the players he has developed.
Hmm. Yeah. That's
Walcott,
true.
Oxlade, Chamberlain. They're not great players, but he's emotionally attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
Kieran Gibbs, why are these three players still in the lineup?
They all look the same to him. To the referee, rather than to them.
I think that's a really good point. His emotional investment does keep players at the club for far too long. But just to play devil's advocate and flip that on its head, you could say that someone of Oxlade-Chamberlain's stature being lost by the club is a bigger tragedy because, like, that's just a squad player. If you can't even keep hold of your squad players, then you're in serious trouble. Losing your best two players to big clubs is something that's always happened.
Right.
But losing, you know...
I see your point. Once Ox feels it's time to,
yeah,
to bail,
that's
then you're really...
But then is it a tragedy if the rumoured £35 million bid from Liverpool comes
awesome.
In? If that rumour, which is, like we said, nonsense, comes true, you... As Harry Redknapp would say, you put him in a wheelbarrow and you move him to Liverpool, your goddamn self.
I will
self.
Carry him on my back from here, from Toronto. Swim with him across.
And you'll fly.
Someone else, just to mention Middlesbrough a little bit in this game, someone else who will be bought, I think, in the summer for quite a lot of money, Daniel Ayala was an absolute rock.
Has been.
Yes. And Borough are a bad team going forward. They can't score goals. But they've conceded less goals than Arsenal this season, I think, or about the same.
Less.
And Daniel Ayala is one of the reasons. He was superb.
Yeah, before we move on from this game, which is the last game we're talking about in the Premier League, Sanchez scored a really, really nice free kick.
Mm-hmm.
It was very close to goal. I thought it dipped really well, quite fast. So that was a fun goal to see. The other one was
Ozil.
Ramsey. He chested it down to Ozil. Ozil with his right foot. Also another thing to put in every Arsenal fan's diary. But Ramsey and Xhaka didn't look the most... I mean, this game, Middlesbrough could have really gotten something out of it. And Ramsey, I don't know what he brings. I have no idea why he plays.
How about this?
Yeah.
How about that?
Let's stop talking about Ramsey.
Please.
Yeah.
And let's end the Arsenal segment before we go to Mumu with a roundtable discussion.
Okay.
Yes.
Would you pay Alexis Sanchez $300k a week?
No.
As Wenger says, it's going to be a problem if they do it.
Yes.
Richey, would you do it?
No.
Mohamed?
100%.
I would do it. Alex?
No.
Okay. Split.
Well, sorry. No, and then what?
And then you buy Insigne.
Okay, let's move on.
Abi Mumu. One thing we are no sha, Mumu no fit sleep forever. One day, Mumu go wake up.
Mumu of the Week time now, and Mumu of the Week is brought to you by footballheads.com. That is FUTBOL, heads with a Z.com. They're an apparel brand bringing you the freshest snapbacks, beanies, and t-shirts to wear with their customized football club-oriented designs. You listen to us, and so you put UTC in on the website in the code section, and you get 15% off, which is not a bad deal.
I'm thinking of getting some matching hats for the groomsmen, for the bachelor party,
from
Football Heads. That could
be
really useful stuff.
Useful.
But are they all from the same club? Because that would be
I don't know. We'll talk about that offline. But so our listeners know, Mumu is Nigerian Pidgin English, so street slang for fool, idiot, just someone that you just don't like for stupid things. And we like to talk about people who do stupid things off the pitch. And this week, I have an amazing off-the-pitch move because he wasn't playing. And yeah. that's Lucas Perez and Ospina by virtue of his injuries. So Arsenal were losing to Palace, was yep. it? They were losing to Palace. And they were not A, watching the game, but they were playing some virtual reality game. I don't know which game it was, but they had their VR headsets and they were playing this game.
Instead of watching
their team lose.
Maybe it was a game in which Arsenal win games.
Maybe. Well, there was a gun, which is interesting. Oh, okay. And the Gunners thing is interesting. Right. But he then decided to post the video during the game. So not only are you watching during the, but he's posting it live. Yeah. And it's just, what is wrong
with... The first thing I would do as manager is to ban any social media during a match.
Well, I mean, that comes with common sense, though.
You shouldn't need to.
I have no issue with him being on the VR. Just don't post it.
I mean, I have an issue with him being on the VR. He should be watching his team suffer. Yeah. Like, that's what he should be doing.
To me, the biggest issue is that he's not in the squad.
Yeah, he should be in the squad. Arsene Wenger, thank you.
Yeah. Ospina is also in the wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think it's because he keeps faking injuries.
He's playing in a world where he's not injured.
Second Mumu this week. Felipe Melo, everyone's favorite absolute lunatic, who's currently playing for Palmeiras. He said, "Gaston Rodriguez spent the whole game calling me a monkey. I think his wife must have betrayed him with a black man."
Wow. Way to take the higher road, man.
He went on to say, "If it was Felipe from a long time ago," referencing himself, "I'd have hit him, but God has regenerated me. I've learned a lot." You know,
so he's traded blows for insults.
Sorry, what's the name of the guy that insulted him?
Gaston Rodriguez.
I wonder if Gaston Rodriguez's wife is the girlfriend of the guy who in South Africa talked about his girlfriend in the Man of the Match.
Yeah, our latest, our Mumu, like a few weeks ago. He was a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would bring it nicely to a full circle.
That would be amazing.
Bernie working for Interpol or something?
Wow.
Happy Mumu. One thing we all know, sha, Mumu no fit sleep forever. One day, Mumu go wake up.
Champions League time. A little bit of continental Europe.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I say continental Europe. We're going to start with Leicester and Atleti.
When you say continental, I just think of breakfast, and now I want a croissant.
Well, you're starting
don't
with breakfast.
Say
oh,
the
God,
word,
Alex, I'm so hungry.
Don't
right
say
now.
The word croissant around me. Anyways, Atleti hosted Leicester and beat them 1-0. On a technicality.
So Atleti hosted Leicester, and let's just touch on Madrid hosting Leicester fans.
Yeah,
how
yeah.
How did
yeah.
that go?
I mean, it went from the whole Dortmund-Monaco bus thing where the whole fans came together and it was a celebration of humankind and all that, to then, a day later, Leicester singing about
Gibraltar
in Madrid.
And robbing pubs.
Yeah.
This is why Jamie Vardy stayed, by the way. Because
yes.
all these people are a reflection of him.
Yes,
this
sure.
is, when they wore the masks, they just became
true.
Jamie Vardy.
So I guess they did deserve that non-penalty call that gave Atleti the lead 1-0.
I mean, it was outside the box.
Yes.
It was a bit of... Like, Griezmann was looking for it.
Yeah.
But equally, Albrighton was really stupid to even go in on that.
Do you guys remember when Roche said... I think it was about James or something like that. That it was so close to the penalty box that you might as well give a penalty.
Yeah.
They listened to you.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
It was for the good of the game.
Let's be fair. If Atleti get a free kick, we're in crossing range. It's as good as a goal.
You know, about this game, I don't think Leicester did that bad. Considering it was away at the Vicente Calderon to Atletico Madrid.
They did brilliantly.
Yeah. They were
bombarded, to be fair. They're lucky to come away with this with 1-0.
To be fair, besides that, there were just a few long shots. One that hit the post from Koke.
Yeah.
A couple of over the bars. That's about it.
Vardy had the worst stats of any human to ever play football. Mm-hmm. He had, I think, two passes all game. And both of them were incomplete. He wasn't even in the game. He might as well have been.
There is one thing, though, about Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
That I really love right now. It's the simple fact that I believe we had a debate on the first pods where Mohamed said that refusing Arsenal was a bad idea because they would play four games in the Champions League and they would not, it'd be inconsequential. They're in the quarterfinals. Arsenal are nowhere to be found and they have had a renaissance in the Premier League. So, roundtable, was his rejection of Arsenal worth it?
Yes.
Yes.
One, two,
yes.
Mohamed said yes. Miracles to happen, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Rashid, you were saying earlier that Leicester are still in this game.
Yeah.
For sure. In this tie, sorry.
Yeah, I think, we saw in the last match, they came back, they overturned a deficit against Sevilla, 2-0 at home. You could expect the same kind of performance when they play against Atletico.
The thing is, Atleti score 1, Leicester need 3. That was going to be tough.
Yeah.
Still wouldn't put it past them, though. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
We touched on the Monaco Dortmund thing. Obviously, the pregame situation was a shame. Mark Bartra was slightly wounded and all that stuff. And, you know, we'll spare you
they're actually quite lucky, to be honest. The timings of the bombs were basically off.
I mean, people were saying there was, like, nails in the heads, in the headrests. Like, that's how close it could have... That's how bad it could have been.
That's pretty bad.
But moving on from that, they played the game a day later, which a lot of people are saying was not enough. Because if you heard the Dortmund coaching staff and players after that game saying, we were definitely not mentally prepared to play this game. Anyways, UEFA decided to do it. The game, we all knew that it would be a goal fest when Monaco meet
Dortmund.
We knew this. And it ended up 3-2, and it didn't disappoint, to be fair.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, it looked as though early on that Monaco were going to kind of run away with it. And Mbappe got two, I think. One of them, a brilliant finish.
Oh.
He nicked it off.
Not to mention the penalty miss.
Yeah, well, there was a penalty miss too, which could have made the gap even bigger. But I thought Dortmund did brilliantly well. A, to compete in this game, given the situation, but B, to come back into it in the way that
which
they did.
Which gives them a chance, because I know there's three away goals, but we know Monaco, I mean, they can score a lot, but they don't defend very well. So there is a chance for Dortmund to turn this around.
Kagawa coming clutch at the end and assisting a
goal. My boy!
Yeah, your boy, yeah.
I just want to highlight, I think, you know, despite Monaco's early dominance and, you know, the own goal by Bender and everything, I think that Dortmund kind of threw this one away, because, I mean, for Monaco's third goal, a bad back pass, Mbappe was one-on-one. Great finish and everything, but they had no business being in that position to begin with.
How good is Sven Bender's own goal, by the way?
It was spectacular. And I love that he tried to claim that it was a foul or something. He's like, mate, you did a diving header. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, Mohamed, you pulled up a stat recently about Mbappe. Well, it's not just about Mbappe, but go on.
It was the effectiveness of number of goals to minutes played and basically contributions, assists as well.
Mm.
And Mbappe was first in the whole of Europe.
Yeah.
First, and in second place is Messi. So it shows you kind of what company he's in this season in terms of the stats.
I hope he stays at Monaco another year. Okay. I really do.
It depends. If he goes to Madrid, it's messed up. But if he goes to somewhere, you know, in the middle, he'll be okay.
I hope so.
Now, I know you're talking about Mbappe and, you know, Messi in the same sentence for some odd reason. But earlier, before the pod started, you also did mention, oh, look at that. That's like shades of Henri, mate. That's shades of Henri. And I think he is. He's got Henri finishing,
yeah.
But he's got Gilberto Silva's body.
Sure, I think it's shades of Theo, to be fair.
I you know that he's better than Henri at the same age, right?
That's
actually not even close.
Yeah.
So let's see how he.
The thing is, Henri just skyrocketed. Like, he just decided to become one of the best players ever. Like, all of a sudden. So Mbappe is in a good kind of trajectory.
If he maintains it.
Anyways, moving on. Madrid, Bayern Munich. This was a game of literally two halves.
Yes.
Bayern looked fantastic in the first half.
Two halves and one Javi Martinez.
Hey. And one Vidal missed penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was a shame because that would have killed the game, I think.
He was playing well.
He was.
He scored a brilliant header.
What a hit.
And then missed the much easier one.
Yes.
Right after.
Roche, you described his head as something. I can't remember what it was, but it was very, very funny.
Vidal's head?
Yeah. Anyway, it's like a Toblerone or something. Anyway,
was that me?
I think so.
Was that a dream, Alex?
But Bayern played really well in the first. And I think when we predicted this game, we said that we felt that Bayern were going to look the better team. But Madrid are kind of a reflection of Ronaldo. They put up the stats. They put up the goals. And Ronaldo had a man-of-the-match performance. And no matter how they look or what they do, they will get the goals needed to get through.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done in the Champions League recently, and they've done it this game again.
You know what? I think in this match, Bayern were their own biggest enemy. Because you see Ancelotti versus Zidane. Master versus student, in some ways. Now, Bayern were up 1-0, and they also missed a penalty. They could have been up 2-0.
Yep.
They got that red card. And at that point,
silly, like two yellows in 4 minutes.
It was a bit of a shame, but it also exposes something that we didn't really think about, is that their squad depth is not that great outside of the Bundesliga. Because Lewandowski injured, and the substitute is Thomas Müller, who ordinarily you would say,
fantastic,
that's great. He wouldn't even be a sub, he would be on. But his form has been so, so bad this season, that it's like playing with a man less. Do you remember Thomas Müller in this game? No,
he was horrendous.
Did he take the corner for Vidal?
Sure. But
he got an assist. He played the stats.
It was one of Müller's worst performances. And I take your point about the squad depth, but then you think of Kingsley Coman and Douglas Costa and players like that. And Ancelotti is a brilliant manager, obviously, but he's also quite a traditional one. Whereas someone else in this situation might have gone, all right, Muller's in terrible form, so we're going to go false nine or try something else. Mm. Ancelotti doesn't. He does what he knows.
Also, it was very surprising to watch Munich crumble. Like, I know they were 10 men. I know they looked exhausted at that point. But they didn't really hold a tactical shape at that point. It's like, you could have taken the 1-0. You could have even taken the 1-1. But then they just they left it so open. They attacked a lot. They counter-attacked Madrid a lot. And I thought they would just take the 1-1 to the Bernabeu.
I think what's concerning about what you're bringing up is, right before they even got the sending off, the tide had turned. Ronaldo had scored the goal. Obviously, Armington got sent off. Zidane figured something out and communicated that to his players. Ancelotti did not. There was no shift. There was absolutely no shift at all.
Was it Alex that mentioned something about Zidane being a young manager recently? Because I was talking to someone and he said something very smart. He said Zidane is a young manager. Mm. And you can see it in how he starts games and how he ends games. Mm. And as games go on, he gets better. So I think it was a Madrid fan who was saying, just from watching Madrid, first half, Zidane usually doesn't get it right. Mm. They don't look very good. The game is still in the balance. Halftime comes along. He makes a few changes. He realizes why he started off wrong. And Madrid are good enough to still be in the game at that point. And then they always improve. And it's just a trend that he seemed to notice just from being a young manager. He adapts as the game goes on and not necessarily always starts correctly.
Well, it's better than the opposite.
So. Sure.
But
sure.
To the point Alex made earlier, Ancelotti does what he does. And if you notice when Real Madrid won La Decima, it was more or less, hey, Bale, Ronaldo, you guys just enjoy it, do whatever you want. He even says he's not really all that hands-on. And you saw it with Bayern Munich. He's not. He told them, do whatever you like. But Zidane is almost more Mourinho than he is Ancelotti in controlling every little thing that these guys do.
Before we move on to the next game, who to go through here? I think Madrid for me.
Yeah, Madrid.
I mean, I picked Bayern.
Right, still?
So I'm just going to stick with it because
principle.
Yeah, I'm ride or die like that.
Right, right.
Wow.
Personal philosophy. Real Madrid, yeah. Okay. But just a quick shout out to Xabi Alonso's Instagram game. If you haven't checked it out, my God.
I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah,
what does he do?
I mean, one, he looks phenomenal. Yes. Two, he dresses phenomenally. Three, his wife looks phenomenal.
Three reasons to follow him right now.
How can you not have...
I'll follow him.
What does he not
just
do?
A quick example. The latest is of him sitting in his hotel room with a view of the, I guess it's the Bernabeu, with his feet up on the ledge, and it's just like
coming back home, or
coming back home to a magnificent stadium. It's, like, it's just majestic.
True. Last but not least, Barça Juve. This was a game where really it showed that Barça had ran their luck. Like, they should not be here at this point. They luckily got past PSG. They don't really deserve to be where they are right now. Mm-hmm. That was a crazy one-in-a-lifetime thing. Mm-hmm. And Juve again exposed them. Luis Enrique started with a ridiculous lineup. He played Mathieu in the back three, who's been horrendous. He then brought on, somehow, Gomes to save the game.
Where was Umtiti playing?
He was there.
It was like left back or something?
No, it was back three and Mathieu was like wide.
Well, is there any excuse whatsoever for playing Jeremy and Mathieu?
No.
No.
Absolutely nudes? Not. He has his nudes?
He might have his nudes.
What could be worse than that is bringing on Andre Gomes.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen that meme going around about the fourth official when he's doing the substitution, looking over at Andre Gomes, and the captions of the meme is all like, even when the fourth official is surprised, you're coming on. but I think this is one too far for Barca at this point. I mean, people are talking about comebacks and stuff. Juve will score a goal. We know this. Now, will Barca score, what, five?
Six?
Five.
It's just... the thing about this game is, to me, it epitomizes most of their season. Sure, they're second in La Liga, whatever, but they live and die by that front three.
Yeah.
And the midfielders being Andre Gomes and whoever doesn't help, but they live and die by those guys. It's unbelievable how, I'll say Messi was not poor, but still not effective.
Player.
And Neymar and Suarez were horrible.
Yeah,
Neymar went back to form, which is bad form, and I really want to see them step it up because they have to. They have no choice.
I mean, this is...
Quickly, last two games Barca have played in Europe, lost 3-0 to Juventus, lost 4-0 to PSG.
Well, with home.
Away games. Yeah.
But Dybala may not play. Not that... He has an ankle injury from the Pescara game.
He renewed his contract, thus he's done. Dybala, I mean, to point out him, I mean, he was fantastic that game, and the whole team just looked so well-drilled and knew exactly... I mean... I was watching that game and thinking, if you can get Mandzukic to play well as a wide player, you've achieved nirvana. Like, you're done.
Well, this is the thing. Allegri went through the season, and I can't remember what system he started out with. It might have been like a three at the back thing. And halfway through, Juve were still winning games, obviously, but they weren't playing as well as he wanted. And he wanted to try and get all his attacking players in, Mandzukic, Higuain, and Dybala. And so he came up with 4-2-3-1 with Mandzukic on the left.
Yes.
Like, it's bizarre, but it works.
To explain exactly the genius of Allegri and why I think he's a much better manager than his counterpart. The Napoli, they played Napoli twice. I think in the Copa or something like that. But they played them twice. He literally played an offensive tactic in the first game and then played a defensive tactic in the second game. And he literally said, he's prepping for this.
Wait, adapting?
He used Napoli and did tactic, basically played one game attacking, the next game defensive against Napoli,
yeah,
just in essence to practice for Barcelona. That is
Napoli
genius.
Who look a lot like Barcelona in terms of the front three,
yeah,
and the way they play.
So.
And, I mean,
so.
Adapting your tactics to the opposition, that is foreign to me.
Here we go.
Yeah.
But we will leave that alone, Blood.
Yeah. Blood fam.
Blood fam. All right.
Fam, blood fam.
I think that will do it for this week because we're degenerating.
TFC lost 2-1, but we won't talk about that.
Yes, TFC did lose 2-1.
Fam.
But we'll talk about them when there's something more positive to report, I think. All right.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.